audio conferencing center. Please enter a conference ID followed by pound. If you're the leader, please now. After the tone, please record your name and then press pound. The leader has not yet joined the meeting. Please wait for the... Welcome to the Audio Conferencing Center. Please enter a conference ID followed by pound. If you're the leader, please press star now. If you scheduled this meeting, please enter your PIN now. You are now joining the meeting as a leader.
Good morning. This is Ryan Vansell, Hearing Examiner. Who do I have on the line?
Good morning. You have Brandon Grubin and Sam Jacobs for the applicant.
Okay.
Hello. You have Donald.
I'm sorry. What was... I didn't catch that last name.
I said, this is Bonnie McDonald.
For?
For David. For the appeal.
Cool.
I see. So we have, but okay. Mr. Mooring is on the phone. Is that right?
Yes, David Mooring, also okay. The appellant.
Okay.
Lindsay King for STCI.
Excellent. Thank you all. All right. Thank you all for taking the time to get a contact with me about this motion. As I indicated in communications, there is something that's problematic about the motion that, frankly, I think it's something we all can be responsible for, from the hearing examiner rules to the applicant and the appellants as well. So I think it's best that we all just figure out our what we want to do to address this. And I'll frame the issue for, and then we can discuss it. So under the hearing examiner rules, there's a clear opportunity to dismiss cases, and it's laid out in Rule 3.02, and that's framed as the examiner can dismiss for cases that are without merit on their face, frivolous, or brought merely to secure delay. And let me take a step back, and for Mr. Mooring's sake or others, but I want to frame this as, in litigation, we have two common pre-hearing motions or dispositive motions that happen before actual hearings to address issues. And one of them is what's identified as Rule 12B6. Under the civil rules, that's the number of the rule, is 12B6, and that essentially is the same as the item identified in the hearing examiner rule 3.02, dismissing a case that doesn't have merit on its face. So in its simplest terms, for example, an appellant comes in and they ask for relief of, you know, the hearing examiner is asked to give the appellant a pair of shoes as a relief. I can't do that under the law, and so on its face, that gets dismissed, and that would be a 12B6 motion. Another type of common motion is summary judgment. Summary judgment motion is a bit more involved than a 12B6 or merit on its face motion, and that involves actually providing affidavits and evidence, and ultimately, though, they are linked in saying, look, even with a little bit of evidence and just scratching at the surface here, the issue is a matter of law, should be ruled in favor of the movement. And the challenge we have with the motion, as I see it, is most of the motion is framed in terms of dismissing the appeal because it lacks merit on its face. That's stated in subsections and the conclusion and in the title. The title is Applicant and Owner's Motion to Dismiss Land Use Appeal. The motion itself, though, is supported by evidence, has exhibits, and does call for facts, and or at least a cursory look at the facts. And in fact, that's what the applicant says in their reply, is that Mr. Mooring didn't state any facts to support his response to the motion. The problem is, even if Mr. Mooring was an attorney, or certainly in the cases of pro se, he's had no notice that this is a summary judgment motion. It's not in the heading. There's no standard of review. There's no discussion of this being a summary judgment motion. What I commonly see in these cases, and I think it's in part due to the messiness of the hearing examiner rules, which I intend to try to address in revising the rules at the beginning of next year, but short of that, what I'm seeing is a motion that doesn't necessarily let the appellant know what he's in for and that he's got to respond with evidence. Now, surely it's possible that a pro se respondent to a motion still wouldn't get it, but I might not provide evidence, and maybe there isn't any in this case, but what does need to happen is that everyone's operating by the same rules and is clear about what is actually happening. And so that's the issue I'm going to bring to your attention, is that the motion really is, I think, a summary judgment motion, but doesn't let anybody know that. It doesn't ask the hearing examiner to review it on that standard, but it does include evidence. So I wanted to bring that to the attention of the parties. There's a couple ways that, or at least I can think of, we could go forward on. One would be to revise the motion and give adequate time for Mr. Mooring to respond to that. That would likely involve changing the hearing date by at least a couple weeks to give time for this motion activity to happen. Or I can just go ahead and rule on the motion as it is. We do have filings, and I could make a decision on it, but I am probably not going to be able to do much with the motion, which is fine, too. It just means that we go to hearing, potentially on issues that could have been addressed via motion. And there are good reasons for doing motions, such as judicial efficiency, and if there are actually issues that should or can be addressed by motion, it's the preference of this body that they be dealt with that way, balanced against the right of individuals to have a hearing. So that's the issue. There's a couple of ideas on how I have to address it. It is the applicant's motion, so what I would do is start with the applicant, see what their comments are, and then I'll go to the appellants and then to the city.
So I guess what I would start off with is that, you know, these types of motions have been, you know, we filed these motions before many hearing examiners in the past, and I think the 12B motion is exactly the same as the motion to this, or without merit on its face under the hearing examiner's rules. If you look at each of the documents we did submit, all of these documents were part of the public record that formed SDCI's decision. So we weren't going outside of the record in terms of obtaining, other declarations or other documents that Mr. Mooring already have access to. So I think by providing the documents, it can still properly be characterized as without merit on its face, because, again, this is, I think, a different standard than a 12B6 motion. I do think that the examiner's rules does allow for different types of dispositive motions. It says motions to dismiss, including other dispositive motions under 216E. So I think Mr. Mooring had an opportunity to look at the documents that SDCI based its decision on and either show that his appeal had merit or you know, at least identify an issue of fact with respect to him being prejudiced by not specifically characterizing it as a motion for summary judgment. We did discuss a schedule for discovery at that pre-hearing conference. The discovery deadline has now passed, and Mr. Mooring did not conduct any discovery. So to the extent it should have been specifically identified as a motion for summary judgment, and Mr. Mooring should have had an opportunity to provide additional documents or evidence, I don't believe that there are any documents, testimony that he obtained through discovery that he could have submitted in response to the motion. So, unless there's any specific questions, I think that the examiner can rule on this as either, you know, just simply as a dispositive motion under 216, whether it's under the motion to dismiss standard or the summary judgment motion. I think without meritless on its face isn't specifically defined, and the examiner rules do allow the examiner to look to the civil rules for guidance, and I think under either of those standards, whether you're looking at just the pleadings themselves or on the additional documents that were submitted, that provides a sufficient basis for deciding the motion.
All right. Before going to appellant, I just want to make clear that I do largely understand what you've said, Mr. Grimman. I wasn't at all saying that this isn't a motion you can't file. It's very clear that you can. In fact, the rules and our practices make it widely accessible to use any type of pre-hearing motion. So it's not a question of whether you can file this or not. I guess I was just trying to look. I mean, you've got, if it's merit on the face, that really is about the pleading that's been filed, the notice of appeal, and not beyond that. So, as I mentioned, one of the paths I can certainly take on this is just make a decision on the motion. So I do understand that.
I guess I would just ask if Mr. Mooring had any additional documents that he would want to submit in opposition to the motion, and if not, then I think, it would be appropriate to consider it as a motion to dismiss or alternatively a motion for summary judgment.
If you intend for it to be considered as a summary judgment motion, that's really the subject matter of this conference. It was not identified as that, and so I'm happy to do that. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to identify it as such, because you haven't. And this really isn't just an opportunity to provide a response from the appellants. It's, when I read your motion, it actually reads as this motion for summary judgment. But it doesn't say that. So I can go with the standard for merit on its face, or we can alter it to be a summary judgment motion. But if it does, I'm not going to do that on my own volition. I think you need to do that, and I think you need to state it in the motion, and I can give you time to do that.
Well, I would just go back to say that again, I think the meritless on its face standard, I don't know if I saw any case law stating that this is the equivalent of a 12b6 motion where you're limited to just the face of the pleadings themselves. You know, again, all of the documents that were submitted were part of the record and were...
Well, I'm just telling you, I mean, I read merit on its face as just what it says. It's merit on the face of the appeal. That is different than the standard for summary judgment.
Okay. So I guess just a good clarification. So you'd be looking just either a revised or new motion, characterizing it as, you know, a motion to dismiss or a motion for summary judgment. And then
you can either leave it as is and say, yes, we absolutely intended this, and that's what I'm hearing you say, and it's fine. If you want to leave this as a challenge to the notice of appeal based on the merits on its face, then I can work with what I've got here. But I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to, on my own volition, change it to a summary judgment motion. If you want to do that now, that's what the opportunity for this hearing is.
I guess if I could just have a little more information in terms of when, if we were to leave it as a motion to dismiss, when you would anticipate having a decision, and then alternatively, if we decided to have a motion for summary judgment, how far out the new hearing dates would be.
Sure.
That would probably help inform my decision.
Certainly. I guess first I'll punt it back to you and ask how soon could you get it back?
We could have this filed on Monday.
Yeah, it's not a big change. I think we're really talking about a heading and standard of review and just being clear that you're about your relief. So this is not a rewrite of the motion, is my understanding. You can make any edits that you want, but if that's the case, then Mr. Mooring, let's go to you now. Let me ask first, do you have any questions about where we're at? Any comments that we haven't gotten to because I haven't given you a chance to make a statement? And then I have questions for you about your timing.
I'm glad you brought this to my attention because as you correctly identified, neither the co-appellant Bonnie McDonald or myself are attorneys, and we didn't think we were land use attorneys. Although I'm an architect and I think I know the land use codes, not attorney or familiar with these rules. And the hearing examiner rules, as I understand, don't require to have an attorney. But if there is, I'd have to know further what the difference is between the summary judgment, and of course, I'm not asking you to provide that. I'd have to probably seek some legal advice on what that means. In terms of where we're at, I know the motion was originally applied back in late October, and I had a week to reply to that, which I did. There was a rebuttal on that by November 7th, and the discovery documents, as we kind of indicated, were actually due November 27th, which was about 3 weeks or longer than 3 weeks after the motion was replied to. So since that time, I do have information and evidence and proof that there was not all the T's and were crossed and I's were dotted, that I would be willing to or was intending to bring to the appeal hearing. So I'm not sure, again, if this new motion that would come in, I'd probably need more than a week to reply to it. And that sounds like if it's a summary judgment, my limited understanding of summary judgments are an absolute demonstration that the original motion was, or the original motion for appeal was not relevant to the code. I think it is, but it sounds like I'd have to demonstrate that. So I guess that's my understanding of where we're at.
All right, and you're correct. I can't really help you through your understanding of the motions. There isn't any. The hearing examiner is walking a fine line here with this, in the sense that partly I think that this is due to the wording of our rules. We will be revising the rules so that there actually is a summary judgment rule, for example, coming in the beginning of the year. And I see that as problematic. I want an ample opportunity, if judicial efficiency can be achieved through a motion, to achieve that. And so if there's an opportunity to do that with a clearly disclosed motion, I'd like to see that, and so that's an opportunity essentially for the applicant. And then for you, there's also an opportunity where you can actually understand what you're dealing with. So that's where I'm approaching this from, as to whether any of you even understand what I'm saying or how to approach your case. That's really how you need to deal with it. So I guess hearing what you've said, what would be your timing for getting a response to a revised motion? And essentially, unless I understand differently from Mr. Gribben, this would probably simply be, you know, literally revising the heading, maybe putting a standard review and some, and making sure that the arguments are in line with summary judgment. He's not going to take a lot of time on that, so it's not going to be a new motion. It's just going to be a clearly indicated nature of the motion and standard. So if he's coming in on Monday, what would be your timing to be able to get a response to that?
I would like to say 2 to 3 weeks. Knowing that, I'd have to probably run that by an attorney.
I would just add that, you know, again, I do not plan on changing the motion itself, just characterizing it as a motion for summary judgment and providing the standard. So, you know, I think if Mr. Mooring says he has all the documents that he intended to introduce at trial, and the fact that he's seen our motion for, over a month now, then I think a week that's provided for in the hearing examiner's rules is, it should be more than sufficient.
Well, I don't know. You had at least a week to prepare the motion to dismiss, which included a bunch of exhibits onto that. Probably taking a week to engage an attorney, review the case with them. They want to review your document, which is, if I recall, quite lengthy. And then I prepare a written response to the judgment motion. So I don't think that 2 weeks would be unrealistic for that type of what's involved.
So, just a moment, Mr. Gribben. So, the one concern I hear with that, Mr. Mooring, is what you really need to be afforded is a due process opportunity to respond. This motion really isn't any different than, in some respects, I mean, it can be more involved, but, you know, a motion on the merit on its face is as legally complicated as a summary judgment motion. So there really isn't any reason why, I mean, you may have your own reasons, but at least procedurally, there's no reason why an attorney suddenly needs to appear and is necessary for this as a right. In other words, you're telling me at least part of your time is now you've got to change your tactics and bring an attorney in. That may be something that you want to do, and you have every right to do it, but whether I provide a time to do that is a separate question, because you've had an opportunity to have an attorney involved since the beginning of this, and you elected not to, and I recognize the challenges that come around that, but there's nothing special about this motion, a summary judgment motion, as opposed to a motion merit on its face, or the discovery that you've been engaged in. All of those are very complicated and challenging legal issues that any one of them could have required an attorney. So I recognize that this one presents the same challenges as those, but it's not unique. And so providing extra time to do that now seems a bit much.
Okay, well, just assume that there had to be more evidence attached to my response, that this is a summary judgment, whereas a motion on its merit basically doesn't require a lot of evidence to be attached. In essence, we're trying to bypass the appeal hearing that is the opportunity to present the evidence with the summary judgment motion. Is that correct?
The summary judgment motion standard is that there is no genuine issue of fact remaining, and that as a matter of law, I can dismiss either the case in its entirety or specific issues that you've raised. And to get to that issue, so in fact, the bottom line is that no, there are no facts at issue. and it's a matter of law only that needs to be addressed by the hearing examiner. This isn't to present your evidence and present, you know, the other side presents their evidence without having to show up in the hearing. If I'm weighing the evidence at all, that is, that the motion doesn't carry and we go to hearing. However, the motion for summary judgment does allow parties to provide affidavits. It does explicitly allow and call for that as a means of supporting the motion. So there is some discussion of the facts, only to the degree that they say, look, that a claim has been made in the appeal. There's absolutely no base in fact. So, for example, you may have identified a particular document in your appeal and says it's inaccurate or they left off the date. And the other party files the document and says, look, the date is right there. There's no issue remaining around this. So if it's just a quick, so as a matter of law, we win on that issue. So it's not, I'm not going to be weighing evidence. I'm going to be only looking at the facts to the degree that they show there are, in fact, no facts at issue.
I see. Okay. Well, I guess
then. So again, I don't know how much of that even is understandable to you, but what I do know is that that is essentially no more complex a concept than the earlier motion or discovery, et cetera, or even wading your way through the code to have filed the appeal. So I don't see that I can give you more time just to get an attorney. I mean, again, if you want to do that, go ahead. I personally would, well, leave it at that. How much time do you actually need to draft the response minus the attorney time? It sounded like you wanted a week to get an attorney.
Yeah, and typically when you work with an attorney, they like to
I understand that, but what I'm saying is I can't really give you time at this late time to get an attorney. There's no new issue raised here that requires you to get an attorney. So I am giving you an opportunity to respond to the motion.
Mm-hmm.
You had a week before. Let me ask just a minute, Mr. Gribben. You would still need an opportunity to reply as well. How much time do you want for a reply? And I'll tell you both what I'm looking at now. If I get this on the 10th, a week from that would be the 17th. If I gave Amina a couple more days than that, that could help a bit. But, you know, a reply doesn't necessarily need that much time. So how much time do you need a reply if we're trying to get this briefing done before the Christmas break?
Yeah, I mean, I would say 1 or 2 days, and that would probably depend on when his response is due and whether or not I had anything else the following day.
And that's part of what, I don't know if we have complications with this, but let me suggest this. The holidays obviously also presents its own problems sometimes. If I get a revised motion from you on the 10th and Mr. Mooring's response is due on the 19th and a reply is due on the 21st, does that present a problem for either of the parties?
So I'm going to be on vacation the 20th, but what I might propose is if I will get the revised motion by end of business today to give Mr. Mooring the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have his response due the 17th, which would give him 2 weekends, and then I have a reply on the 19th.
Mr. Mooring, does that work for you?
Yes.
All right. And I recognize none of this works well for anybody's schedule, but we are working with a motion that's already halfway down the street, so. All right, we'll have the applicant's revised motion due today, and I will not be sending out a pre-hearing order on this to save everybody time. Just take notes now. The applicant's revised motion is due today, the 7th. Respondent to the motion for, by the appellant. That will be due the 17th.
Yep.
And then the reply is due, you want that, you're gone on the 20th, right, Mr. Griffin? So you want it up the year two?
Yeah.
Then we're going to do the 19th.
19th.
Right. Okay. And I apologize for going through all that, but that has to inform when I can actually get a decision done. And I have not, we've not made a decision yet to go down this path because I am still holding out the option for the applicant to say, no, go with the motion, because we now need to turn to looking at the calendar for when I can get a decision out and how that would affect the hearing date. So, looking at the calendar, let me look for clear dates. We still have a messy hearing calendar. And I know we've got 4 days set aside for this, which is hard to find that much time. There's two ways we could approach this. I can give you new firm dates for the hearing, and those would be the next earliest clear days for the same amount of time, the 4 days, is starting on January 22nd, the 23rd. We can do the 24th, but part of it would have to be in our small hearings. Or no, we'll just do it here. So we can do, right now the calendar would allow us the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, and the 25th. So if we still have all 4 days, if the motion's denied and there's no issues and we're still looking at the same amount of time needed, we could put it at that. I do have potentially some time opening before that if a hearing is dismissed on the 15th and 16th. But obviously we can't go with potentialities at this point. You would need some type of firm idea as to when we're going to do this. So if the hearing was to be moved to the 22nd through the 25th, then I turn to the authors of the motion, and it's at their discretion as to whether they want to go with the motion as is or revise it and go with the schedule, briefing schedule we have, and propose new hearing dates of the 22nd to the 25th.
Quick question. Did Mr. Examiner have an idea of when the decision would be issued if we were to file a revised motion?
I'm out for the holiday week. So you're coming in, your motion comes in right before I leave, so we're not gaining a lot of time there. It's possible, but this is really, I believe it.
Is this a motion to dismiss the entire case?
Which it is.
Yeah, so that's, if it was just a few issues, I could do it much faster, but realistically, the earliest you're going to see something would be the 4th, but it could go longer. So my concern remains that we'd be right on top of the hearing and you'd all be preparing witnesses, even if you did get a decision prior to our existing hearing dates. It would be too close.
Yeah, understood. So what I would say is my concern is just I would need to confirm the new proposed dates with witnesses. So I would just ask that I have, you know, as soon as I can reach them, hopefully within the next hour or two, confirm availability and then respond to everyone by email confirming that we'll be filing a revised motion with the new date and then rescheduling the hearing for the 22nd through 25th.
Okay, that's fine for you. Let me check now with the appellants and the city for those revised hearing dates. Appellants, hearing dates, new hearing dates moving out instead of from the 7th to the 10th to January 22nd to 25th.
Before we respond, I got a question regarding the subpoenas for the three individuals. Does this mean I'll have to provide them with new subpoenas prepared by your office?
We would have to do that because those were specified dates. I believe they were specified. I don't recall what was in the subpoenas. My legal assistant worked that out with you, but the if I recall, those were for specific dates. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So we would have to redo that.
And is there a minimum time period when a subpoena is delivered to an individual to the date that they actually are required to show up?
There is, and I'm not going to try to remember it, although I think I do. What you do is look to Rule 3.12 in the Hearing Examiner's Rules. 3.12. And under that, subsection D says, unless otherwise allowed by the Hearing Examiner, subpoenas shall be served no later than 7 days prior to the date the appearance or production is ordered.
Okay. So that should be an issue with the proposed January 22nd date. Bonnie, do you have any problems with the January 22nd date?
No problem, David.
Okay. All right. And Ms. King, we've all been talking over you. Do you have any concerns with that? And frankly, with anything that's been, the city's not a party to the motion really so much. I know that they filed a response in support of the motion, but if there's anything else you want to add at this point, it'd be good to hear from you.
Thank you for having me on the phone call. It's been a very interesting conversation. I don't have anything to add. And the dates for the 22nd to the 25th would be fine. Perfect.
Okay. All right. So what I'm hearing from all parties is that our approach to this is we have a proposed new schedule. I'll go back over that, but that schedule will not take effect unless we hear from appellants that they will be filing a motion today, a revised motion today, because they need to check with the availability of their witnesses for January 22nd through the 25th. Is that correct? Okay. And Mr. Gribben, if you will simply just let us know by the end of the day, there's no urgency on our parts. I know you want to try to get it done in the next hour or two, but frankly, if you let us all know by filing your revised motion, that's adequate. You've got other things to do today, and none of our lives are changed, regardless of what you do between now and 5 o'clock. So,
okay.
If you'll just let us know, either by filing that revised motion or just sending an email saying we're doing it, that would be welcome. If the applicant does choose to take this action and submit a revised motion, then the following schedule will apply. And again, I will not be sending out another pre-hearing order for this, so please take notes on these dates and also let me know if I've missed something. If the applicant files a revised motion, they will be filing it today. Response from either the appellants and or the city will be due on the 17th. A
reply from the applicant will be due on the 19th. And we'd set new hearing dates for January 22nd through 25. Are all of those dates the same? Is there anyone that has a different dates than that?
No, that's right.
Sounds good. There's one other question that I would have.
Okay, and before we get that, is there anything that I missed that we've discussed so far? Okay, Mr. Morin, you had a question.
So if the new motion is submitted today, then originally I had my final witness list due next week, the 14th.
Excellent
sure.
question.
I would wonder if I could get additional equivalent time added on to that.
Yes. Let's revise. I do not. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can find our pre-hearing. Order for this. Yes. All right. Let's go ahead and revise or identify revised dates for exhibit and witness list exchanges. Again, assuming that the revised motion is filed. If the new hearing date starts on the 22nd, then we don't need the appellant's witness exhibit list until January 7th. And then the city and applicant would be due for that on January 14th. And that's final exhibit and witness lists and exchange of exhibits.
That works for the applicant.
Okay. Ms. King, does that work?
Yes, that works for me.
All right. All right. And frankly, despite my wish not to do more work on this. If you do file a revised motion, Mr. Gribben, I will issue a new pre-hearing order with all of these dates in it, just for the sake of efficiency for all the parties.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I think we have everything now. Any further questions, concerns?
If the new motion is filed today, what would I expect from the hearing examiner's office relative to the relative to the three people that I subpoenaed? A new letter would I receive? Or
I'll just take your request orally here for subpoenas, and we will revise those and send them out to you.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Sorry, Mr. Gribben, did you have a question?
No, I was just saying nothing further from us.
Okay. All right. Thank you all very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.